a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to A Woman's View on KSL News Radio. My pleasure this week to have Luz Lewis-Perez with me, the Director of Development and Programs for the National Kidney Foundation for Utah and Idaho. Michelle Arnold is here, Professor of Physics at Weber State, and Charlotte Jessup is my guest, President of Smedley Financial. I had mentioned this just before the break, but I wanted to ask you about how we deal with severe mental illness in the state of Utah. Do we provide enough resources for people who are severely mentally ill, or are we lacking in that area and it's leading to our jails and prisons being filled with people with severe mental illness? And those, you know, corrections is not set up to deal with illness. They're set up to deal with punishment. And it reminds me too, I'll ask this and then I'll throw it to you, of when I've talked to officers who work in the downtown Salt Lake City area and interact with a lot of homeless people, they tell me a large percentage of homeless people have mental health issues. And so there's another place that this population is winding up. They're winding up in prison and they're winding up homeless on the street. So we're failing. We're failing here somehow. How would you move forward, Charlotte?
You know, coming from a family that has dealt with some mental illness, some severe mental illness, I think it's a very huge burden on individuals and our state that we really need to spend some time figuring out. I think that one of the hardships we face is that you cannot force somebody to do something, and you can get them help and, you know, help them find resources and medications and things that they need, but you still cannot force them to do something, which I think sometimes that's what we want to do. We want to paint a box and think, okay, we fixed this. Now it's okay, but I think that mental illness is a problem it just takes a lot of effort, and I think it's going to take a lot of programs to help get the people the help that they need and to help recognize the people who need the help. Because generally right now, I believe, this is my personal opinion, that family members are the ones who are stepping up and helping to manage that.
For sure, they are. And in some cases, it's tragic because they're not equipped. And so it winds up destroying lives in the process. I have experience with a family where they had, I think it was a daughter with disabilities of some kind that led her to be violent. And as she grew older, she grew large and strong, was much heavier and much stronger than her mother and even her father, and would get violent with them. And there wasn't a place for her in a state facility. And so the mother tried to keep caring for this girl who would hit her on occasion, and even when she was driving. And I have thought about that for years, thinking that's a primo example of how we are failing that family. And we, you know, people need help. Michelle, what do you make of this?
I'll start with, I think it's incredibly complicated. And yes, we probably need to have some conversations, because what is happening isn't working for a lot of people, and we probably could do things a lot better. I am on a school board for an elementary school, and the number of students coming through elementary schools who do have various mental illnesses is going up. And there's very good research on that the percentage of students that are having difficulties in this area is increasing. And so there's that part to think about, that we have an increasing rapidly growing population of individuals who will need help. Also, I would like to throw in that, you know, if we're not doing enough, probably the earlier we can do things, if things can be recognized in 6 and 7 and 8 year olds, and are there things that we can do to help and teach them coping mechanisms or help them deal with, you know, this society that they're somehow going to be expected to live in, with who they are, and help them navigate that. Probably the younger we can intervene, the more successful we will be.
Oh, that's so important. Michelle, Luce, what do you say?
Oh, it's such a huge topic. And I think you're talking about really that era in the 80s when Geraldo went into one of the, you know, asylums for the criminally insane, they used to call them, and, you know, showed the terrible conditions. And we keep doing this from the Victorian era, the medieval era on. We keep trying to solve this problem of mental illness. And, you know, as I was reading that article that you suggested that we read, it is, there are people out there, there are social scientists, there are healthcare workers, there are psychiatrists, and there are criminologists. And somehow we need to find different tiers of care. When they outlawed basically mental health institutions, I think that is a really one of the largest drivers behind why we have such a large homeless population. You know, they offend and then they reoffend. And then there are those that would respond to behavioral therapy, which is what prison is supposed to be, meaning you have a system by which you could potentially rehabilitate people who learn how to keep rules and who improve their behavior. But then there are people who are truly mentally ill who absolutely cannot see the logic behind or have any impulse control. It's a gigantic issue. So you have to separate those who are criminally minded but have potential for behavioral therapy to improve their lives. And then you have those who really are just reactionary and unhappy. And those are the ones who are dangerous. Those are the kinds of people that need help, and they're out because there's nowhere for them to go but prison, that you don't know whether or not they can actually be improved through behavioral therapy. But we don't have the mental health care facilities that we used to. And of course, the federal government was probably pretty happy to let go of the bill on that one. But we haven't reinvested, and we are losing that investment into our community by not investing at all in anything.
Brilliant, and so well said, all three of you. And I'm thinking too about these mass shootings that we saw this week, and how whenever something horrible like that happens, people always bring up the mental health component. And that's just yet another area of this discussion where we're failing. And we admit we fail every time, but we don't seem to take action steps toward a plan for better, like you said, Michelle, like addressing from the time people are young who need help so they don't develop into teenagers who might pick up a gun.
And I'll add on that, like there's anecdotally, I know of parents who have said, you know, I don't want my child diagnosed. I don't want, because if there are laws that are passed that prevent them from ever owning a gun, if they have this diagnosis on hand, they'll never be able to go hunting with me. It's something we're going to have to think about, because we're getting more and more. It's not like that population is decreasing. It's increasing.
Right. The time is gone, ladies. I have only time left to say happy holidays to all of you, and thank you for your friendship these many years.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll see you next week here on A Woman's View.